Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. When Nighttime Falls, Volume 2, Story 1. This is an event that happened this most recent Halloween. No one in our group has really spoken of it since it happened. I've done some follow-up, and I'm afraid that my curiosity might get the best of me. Allow me to explain. I was working this last Halloween at a small bar on the outskirts of town. As a result, I missed out on most of the events that transpired that night. The bar I work at is more of a seedy stop for truckers, and not really what you'd call a party haven. So I felt left out of all the fun since my friends got to go out to the more happening clubs. When I got off of work, I texted my friend Jay to see if there was any house parties to go to afterwards. He replied and told me he was at this girl's house. I didn't know her that well and didn't know where she lived, so I got some detailed directions. They needed to be detailed because the girl lives in some type of weird spot. The house was in a trailer court type area. To get there, you have to drive onto a side street that is rather difficult to see if you don't know where it is. Pass this old building, then go down this pitch black road for a moment or two. Then this trailer court area kind of appears out of nowhere. I figured out exactly which house it was and called Jay, telling him to meet me outside. I didn't want to have misheard his directions and go walking into the wrong house at 2:30 a.m. Came out, we went in, and I took a look around. Inside of the house is the girl, Derek and Leon. Derek and Leon were also buddies of mine, but I didn't know them as well as Jay. There was this other girl I don't know, but apparently she's friends with the girl who lives there. So all in all, there were six of us, counting myself. It started out as a rather laid-back and very boring ordeal. Both of the girls were pretty drunk, and being somewhat obnoxious, all of my male friends were pretty much done for the night and were starting to fade fast. I had originally come in with energy, but also started to quickly die down myself, as I saw this night was probably going nowhere. Then she appeared, out of nowhere. This girl appeared behind me. Allow me to describe the layout of the house to attempt to make this easier to visualize. The living room is one big long connected room. As you walked into the house, the living room extended to a hallway that led to bedrooms on the left. In the very center is a bathroom. To the right, where most of us were hanging out, is a kind of an open area that had a large dining table and a large open archway that led to the kitchen and to a back door. I was standing in the archway to the kitchen with my back to the rear door of the house when she appeared. The thing is, no one heard her come in. No one heard the door open. She was just there. She was dressed in this very strange costume. It's rather difficult to describe just what she was wearing. It was a faded black costume that looked like it was hundreds and hundreds of different straps of different materials. It covered her entire body like some kind of gothic mummy. Everything but her eyes and her mouth were covered on her face. Even the ears on this woman were wrapped tight in this dark material. At the top of her head, the material was fashioned into a large devil-type horns that curved inward. Her eyes were very dark brown, almost black. She had a dark purplish lipstick on her mouth. Truth be told, there was something about her that instantly sickened me when I saw her. She never stood still the entire time either. She was constantly moving in this slow, fluid, almost tribal dance way. Not like she was actually dancing, but as if some kind of sublime and unnerving energy was constantly flowing through her. I honestly didn't even want to make eye contact with her, and I am not a socially awkward person. It was as if everyone noticed her at once. The girl who owned the house said, hello. The dark-clothed girl made her way closer to us. She got very close to me, and I honestly turned away and took a few steps back. I wanted to be nowhere near her. She finally spoke. Do you know me? She almost hissed as she spoke. Her voice was much more raspy than what you could expect from a woman. I looked over at the owner of the house, awaiting her answer. But it honestly seemed as if the dark-clothed woman was speaking to all of us, seeing us how the girl who owned the place was the initial one to talk. She seemed obligated to reply. You don't look familiar. You should all know me. You all know me if you tell the truth. Tell the truth that you know me, because I know you. As she rasped the last words of that sentence, her hand made a sweeping gesture to everyone standing around the room. It was at this moment that I realized her fingers were unnaturally pointy. Part of the costume? For my sanity's sake, I had to assume it was. Derek cleared his throat, sat up in his chair, and tried to normalize the situation. I think I know ya. Like a shot, the dark-clothed woman slid right up to him, inches away from Derek's face. He suddenly reared back and continued, You're Holly's sister, right? The woman shook her head, then put her pointy index finger up to Derek's lips. Shh. Still moving in that weird, slow-flowing mannerism. What the hell was wrong with this woman? The front door to the house suddenly opened. Two other guys, who I had never seen before, came drunkenly stumbling into the house. The abruptness of their arrival seemed to initially startle everyone, but was a welcome break in the tension. They immediately started talking to the girl who owned the house. The initial conversation between them wasn't really anything significant. It was just a regular drunken rabble that people partake in upon the first arrival to a laid-back house party. As the conversation between the host and the new arrivals was taking place, I turned around to notice that I couldn't see the woman. Did she go into another room? Where the hell did she go? I took a seat on the couch and began to relax a bit again. One of the drunk guys plopped down on the other side of the couch I was sitting on. We were all relaxing with our drinks when suddenly the guy who sat on the same couch as me completely flipped his shit out of nowhere. You! What the fuck are you doing here? Get the fuck out. Get the fuck out right now! The guy flew backwards from where he was sitting and knocked over a lamp that was on a small end table. He fell over the end table and ended up on the floor. I turned and looked towards where he was looking. The woman was standing there, moving in her eerie, fluid manner. She then let out a sudden, dry cackle that almost hurt my ears. It was so loud. The other drunk guy grabbed his friend and said, "Let's get the fuck out of here." He lifted his buddy up off the floor and dragged him out of the house. The entire time, the freaked-out drunk guy screaming obscenities at the top of his lungs. The man went from a low-key drunken buzz to completely losing his mind in no time at all. It was as if he saw a ghost. Once the two drunk guys left, the girl who was friends with the host spoke up. "What the hell is going on? How do you know him?" "You should see. You should all come see." The dark-clothed woman suddenly became wide-eyed. She swept her hand around the room one more time. She then took her long pointed finger and pointed away from the house. "Come. Below the three crosses. Come see." I need to break away for a moment to clarify this part of the story. Another odd aspect to this trailer park type neighborhood is that nearby up on a hill, there are three large wooden crosses. I don't know the story behind them. If my memory serves correct, an old church in town got permission to put them up there years and years ago. They rest on top of the hill and can actually be seen from many of the main roads in town. Although until I visited this particular area, I wasn't sure how one actually accessed them. Now I knew. Jay spoke up. "What's up there?"
"Me?"
the woman hissed in reply. "Well, you're already here. Why would we need to go up there?" asked Derek. The woman froze. She finally had stopped moving. But she didn't say anything. She didn't blink or even appear to be breathing anymore. It was as if time itself had suddenly stopped in the area immediately surrounding her. Completely unnerved at this moment, I turned and walked away without saying a word. I walked into the bathroom at the center of the house to collect my thoughts. I headed towards the sink, turned on the cold water, and splashed some of it on my face. What happened next, I'm not even sure how to process. The instant the cold water hit my face, it was as if I had suddenly went into a dream. My vision was suddenly very blurry. All I could make out were colors and the general shapes of things. It was similar to being very, very drunk in terms of my ability to see what was right in front of me. I felt unable to move, as if I was stuck in place. I tried to leave the bathroom, but suddenly felt trapped, as if someone was embracing me. But it was far from a warm embrace. It was the feeling of someone holding you to keep you from escaping, the feeling of someone about to harm you. As clear as I could understand anything, I heard her scratchy voice right behind me. "You want to go?" And the next instant, I heard an ear-piercing scream, and then everything went dark. I came to and could tell I was sitting down with my back against the wall and legs straight out. I couldn't tell where I was because everything was still very dark. I began to stand myself up using the nearest thing I could put my hand onto, the sink basin. I'm remembering now that I was still in the bathroom. It seemed as though the second I recalled where I was, the lights in the house shot on. I was startled by suddenly seeing my own reflection. My skin looked 2 shades paler and my hair was damp from sweat. What the hell just happened? I washed my hands and face and went out of the bathroom door. All the males were sitting on the couch, all of them staring straight ahead. The host girl was looking out the window with her face mere inches away from the glass. Her friend was sitting at the table by herself looking at the floor with an empty gaze. The dark-clothed woman was nowhere to be seen. Jay looked up at me. "Are you all right, man? You were in there for like 15 minutes. 15? The whole bizarre experience felt like it had happened over the course of 1 minute, perhaps 2 at the most. I was too freaked out to be honest about what I had just experienced and quickly turned the attention away from myself. "What just happened? Did the lights go out? I thought I heard a noise." Everyone just kind of looked at each other. Finally, Derek spoke up and explained to me what had happened. They had all seen it, and it was no less horrifying than what I had experienced. After I had went into the bathroom, apparently the woman remained frozen in place for what felt like a good minute or two. Finally, the host girl asked her to leave. The dark-clothed woman then came back to life. She said that she had found someone who would come and see with her and that it had already been decided. When they asked who it was she was referring to, she said, "Your friend. I have him now," and pointed towards the bathroom. I got chills and nearly wanted to faint when I was told this part of the story. Regardless, I swallowed my fear and listened to the rest of the story. The woman began to move more and more in her strange way. She kept repeating over and over again, "I have him now. I have him now." Then things got truly fucked up. The dark-clothed woman's features began to distort in a way. When I asked for clarification, Derek had a very hard time making it some sense out of what he said. He paused, collected himself a bit, then continued. It was like her legs started to bend the other way, like her knees were backwards, like they'd be on the back legs of a horse. She kept moving her arms, and they seemed like they just got gradually longer and longer. Her fingers, too. They got, like, long and spindly. I was aghast. "What the hell? What did you guys do?" "Nothing." The female host turned away from the window. She spoke up. "It was like we couldn't do anything. Everyone was just stuck. Like a heavy feeling in the room. Like I couldn't breathe. Did anyone else feel that way?" Everyone nodded in agreement. The female host continued. "So finally, I yelled out at her and that she needed to leave. And oh God," she turned back away towards the window and started to cry. The room fell silent again. "And? What happened?" I felt fascinated and nauseated at the same time. Derek jumped back in and finished the story. "Her neck, it like twisted, like she cocked it to the side, but it just kept going. To her head was at a 90-degree angle to her body. And Jesus, man, I hear snapping, like bone snapping. Fucking head kept turning, man." Jay set his beard down and jumped in, and her mouth opened up, like way wider than it should have been able to. Then that was that scream. Jesus, I've never heard anything like that before. That was when the lights went out. I was stunned. literally unable to move or speak. I felt like I was going to vomit, but didn't want to show just how upset the situation had made me. Jay changed his tone back to one of concern. Are you all right? Did you hear any of this in there? Yes, I heard the scream. I was in there just sick as all. I have no idea why I didn't want to tell them about my portion of the experience. My logical brain was saying that I should tell them, but something held me back. It turned out no one knew who she was. No one even knew how she got into the house. When the lights came back on, apparently the host went to lock the back door, but it was already locked. That was the room we first saw her in. Had she come in the front, we would have noticed her right away, as we did the two drunk guys from earlier. I decided it would be best to leave. I grabbed a beer for the road, and most of the rest of the party decided to head out as well. The only ones who stayed were the two girls. As I was getting into my car, Jay pulled me aside. I'm sorry I brought you here, man. You should have never come. I had no reply. I only saw the sadness and regret in his eyes. I drove home, slammed the beer, and passed out. That night, I had a strange dream. I dreamt I was looking up at the hill where the three crosses stood. The sky was a blood-red sunset. Even though it was light outside, it truly wasn't, for all I could see was the silhouette of the crosses and her. I can see her dancing, moving slowly below the shadows of the crosses. There's a sound in my ears. It's like a vibrating wind that blows through a cave, but it's inside of my ear canals. It's cold and unnerving. This sound is all I can hear. As I watch her dance over and over, she beckons me. Despite how uncomfortable I am, I'm compelled up towards her. I get closer and closer. When I feel like I'm within reach of the dark-clothed woman, I feel myself drop straight into the earth. Everything goes dark. The wind sound in my head becomes unbearably loud, and my brain feels like icicles and stabbing the very center. I can't breathe, and I feel as though death is seconds away. Then I woke up, gasping for air and in a cold sweat. The truth is, I've had this dream almost every night since the event. On my way to the bar I work at, I can see the crosses from the roadway. I'm almost always compelled to look at them. One time, I came to a complete stop in the middle of the street. I was completely transfixed by them. It wasn't until someone honked their horn that I snapped out of it and went on my way. I'm even certain that one time I saw her dancing beneath the crosses as I drove by. I nearly got into a wreck from swerving off the road. I have to admit, I think she has me. Because I went up there, friends. I went below the three wooden crosses, and I'm not sure what to think of what I found. I decided that the nightmare were too much. I had to see what it is that is below these crosses. I grabbed a combat knife I kept next to my bed at night and tucked it underneath my jacket. I parked my car nearby and went to look at whatever it was I was going to find. Keep in mind that this is months later. It was significantly colder and snowier than the night that the event happened. I hiked up the hill, feeling the entire time like I was being pulled by a rope. Even though I felt afraid, I felt something else stronger than the fear which compelled me to charge up the hill as fast as I could muster without slipping and breaking my head open. I reached the crest of the hill and gazed at the crosses. The wind was whipping up here, and I felt a cold sting in my ears. Not as painful as in the nightmares, but certainly enough to be a reminder of them. I looked around and saw nothing but the crosses at first. Dirt and weeds and nearby trees were all I saw. Then I walked closer. It appeared almost instantly. I'm sure it was already there, but it's somewhat well hidden, and if someone wasn't paying attention, they could fall right in. But it almost felt as if the earth just opened up. It's a hole. No, fuck that. It's an abyss. A dark black abyss that goes straight down to nothingness. It's deep enough to where seeing the bottom is impossible, even in full daylight. I threw a stone down there to see if I could hear where the bottom might be. Nothing. Silence. I managed to pull myself away. I will tell you this. I'm not free of whatever it is that haunts me up there. I am still compelled to see what is in that abyss and what it is that calls to me. She was right. She has me. Story number two. I have never been what one would call a ladies' man. A most recent fling will likely categorize me into more of the morbid alcoholic type. It's always been that way, and I think a good part of my apprehension towards forming a relationship comes from my experience with Francine. But still, there is, for anyone and everyone, the one person you would want to give your heart and soul to. For me, that was Sarah. Throughout my childhood, there was never a prettier girl than her. I can't bear to give out her last name at the fear that it will only lead to more questions. She was 6 when we first met. I had just turned 7. We were little schoolyard friends. We ran, we played, and we grew closer. The bond continued into middle school, where we became what preteens call boyfriend and girlfriend, but most adults call just holding hands and kissing cheek. We grew more and more, and I enjoyed every minute of it. Even at age 12, I could feel something that I now know was love, but at the same time, it was simply a game of dating. So we continued our exploits until grade 9, and in grade 9, we took it to the next step. We had sex. If you can call the two thrust strut of mine sex. But we continued doing it, growing stronger in our conviction, and finally, we both professed our love for each other. Then her dad got stationed in Virginia, and away she was. I was upset. My first love, my first girlfriend, my first everything, or so my old journals read. But I moved past her. I didn't date anyone through high school, screwed around occasionally, and kept my eyes on Francine. After that exploit, I went to college, and lo and behold, on my first day in my first class, which was intro to economics, if anyone was wondering, there was Sarah. She didn't see me, but I saw her. And suddenly all those feelings of a lovey-dovey 14-year-old came rushing back. After class, she saw me. She approached me, and before she could say anything, I just said, "Sarah." She smiled, shocked, and gave me a big old hug. It was a nice reunion of the star-crossed lovers doomed to be separated, so she had an aura about her. She had it as long as I could remember. Between the long brown hair, the freckled skin, she could captivate anyone. And I am mediocre in looks, but she still wanted to be mine all those years ago, and I realized then that she had gone above and beyond me in terms of her needs and wants. So I played it far cooler than imagine I could. We went and got coffee and talked for hours. Her dad had regretted moving, but they got by. Her older brother had joined the army like her father, and she had decided to come back home to go to school. I filled her in on everything I wanted to. She asked about Francine, as she remembered her from 9th grade, and I told her the story as best I could at that time. It was still a fresh wound, but she understood. We talked for about an hour, probably more, both missing our second classes. It is in college if you don't skip the first day at least once. We exchanged phone numbers. That's landline dorm phones for you, young ones out there, and bid each other a good night. That Wednesday, we had the same class, and we talked again. I called her Friday evening, told her I knew a bar that didn't ID, and we went together. We drank. We split a pack of smokes, and we enjoyed the company. After, we stumbled back to campus, and I invited her to hang out at my dorm with me. By the good graces of God, I didn't have a roommate. She accepted, and up we went. We ran past my RA's room and got into mine just as his door opened. He made his nightly rounds at 1 a.m., and at 12:59, we had made it just in time. We both collapsed laughing, and then I grabbed her, still laughing, and pulled her towards me. We both met halfway and shared a long overdue kiss. From there, we didn't get out of bed until 3 the next afternoon. The only downside to being in a relationship freshman year is being in a relationship freshman year. It cuts down on your freedoms and your wanting to explore. But with her, I never regretted it, even now. We went to class, we partied, we studied late nights in the quad. We found jobs and started working. We came home to each other. My other roommate, she basically moved in with me. It was weird. We hadn't seen each other in years, and suddenly it was all made better in a week. And it continued for months. At Christmas time, I gave her a silver bracelet with her name etched on it. She took me out to the bar that didn't ID and drank me under the table. Then we both gave each other 2 days in bed, with our only outing to go buy food, cigarettes, and condoms. It was heaven. I was in heaven. With her, there was no wrong. Then I found the straw. It was a short little tube. I bumped her book bag and out followed the straw and small plastic bag of white pills. When she got back, I let her in and then asked her about it. She got defensive, but she was honest. She enjoyed snorting crushed Vicodin. She popped them occasionally as well. We made it off not to be a big deal. And because I was crazy about her, I went along with it, albeit with a slight apprehension. She didn't do it around me. She didn't do it before we drank or before a party. But she did it before work. She did it before class. But she was still the same person I remembered and was learning more about. She was still magical. And I knew that if anyone tried to hurt her, I wouldn't hesitate to kill them. As fate would have it, 8 months into our newfound relationship and almost to the end of our first year at college, something happened. She told me she was going to meet a friend. I told her, call me at some point, and off she went. That night, I heard nothing, but went to bed thinking she was away from the phone. The next night, silence was all that came from my ringer until 3 a.m. I answered, relieved, but it was her mother asking if I had heard from her. I said no, I had not, and told her what she had told me. Her mother told me to call if I heard from her and hung up. I waited until 8 a.m. to go to campus police. They took my report down and asked if I knew who she was meeting. I told them no, but then I remembered how the little bag of pills was empty the night before she left. They contacted the police in the town she went to. There, her car and purse were found abandoned behind a local pharmacy. The pharmacist's son, who worked there sweeping the floors, was questioned, and wouldn't you know it, at least 20 Vicodin were missing from the quantity check. He admitted to selling it to her, but that she got in a car with someone else and left after, saying she would be back later. The surveillance camera behind the shop showed what he had said to be true. They charged him with selling the drugs, but released him on her disappearance. I drove to the town and gave my statements to the police there as well. I begged for them to find her. This was unlike her, despite a drug addiction. She was just so perfect, and I feared her one fault was going to bring her down. The first year finished, and somehow I passed my finals. And then I took up residence in a short hall apartment in that small town. I was at the police station almost daily. They got to know me by name and resorted to calling me every morning at the same time to say that nothing new had happened. It was July when a trucker pulled off the side of the road to pee. He went into a little wooded area just off the rest area and let loose all over Sarah, or what was left of her. The police didn't want me to see the records, but I had made some friends there who left the file sitting out after a smoke break. She was beyond recognition, but with the clothing the same as when she left, the same black hair tie holding back her long hair, and the bracelet I gave her for Christmas. There was no denying it. The only thing missing was a gold necklace with her initials on it. She had a strap wound to her stomach and a slash on her thigh. The slash in the thigh severed her femoral artery. I closed the file, left it sitting, and as I walked away, saw my friend collect it and take it back inside. I didn't leave my apartment for 3 days. Everything I ate was thrown up almost immediately. When I finally did venture out, it was out the window of my apartment where I promptly fell to the ground below. When I woke up, I was at the big medical center in the capital city. My parents were there. My mother soothed me, comforted me, and my dad said sternly, but I could sense the sadness radiating off of him. I told the doctors that I was upset, opened the window for some air, and passed out, falling out. Due to my dehydrated being, they believed me, so I never technically tried to kill myself, at least on paper. I made 2 promises that day. 1, even if I felt I had nothing left to live for, I would keep going. Even today, that's my daily mantra. And 2, I would find the son of a bitch that killed Sarah. But I never did. Months of searching eventually led me back to school. I got my degree in psychology. I got a job with a local PI. I became one myself. But I never found the guy. Several relationships, friends, and family have all come and gone. But Sarah is always on my mind. Which would be fine. I could work through that. But I never found the guy. Now, for the part I haven't told my shrink. I think I found him. 2 weeks ago, the police were never able to locate the car she drove off in. A 1983 Cadillac Eldorado. The grainy black and white footage never gave them a color, but they presumed it to be a light color. Well, while looking on Craigslist the other day, I decided to check the area nearest the college. I listed for the town over I found a light blue 1983 Cadillac Eldorado that said it hadn't been driven since the 90s. Just sitting, gathering dust in an old rented garage. The guy who rented it hadn't bothered paying for a year, and they were finally auctioning off the items they found. I got in touch with the garage and got the info for the guy. They willingly gave it up, as I have my PI license. They told me to contact them if I found him. I talked to his old neighbor, and then an old friend. It led to the proverbial rabbit hole of associates, until it back to the kid from the pharmacy, whose actual name was Bill. Bill had a wife and kid, had moved to the city to the north, and put the incident behind him. I found him. He wasn't willing to talk about it. He said he hadn't talked to him in years. But the little white powder sitting on his lapel made me think he wasn't being so honest. So I waited until he was leaving late that night. Then I pulled him into the alley and beat the living shit out of him. Bill had a cocaine problem, and the guy I was looking for was still supplying. He finally gave me the guy's latest address. I went and talked to my shrink again. Didn't give many updates, but just explained to her that Sarah was back on my mind. My shrink reminded me that Sarah was gone, and it was likely that no one would find who did it. But she assured me that whoever did it would certainly get their due when they died. I went to the address the next morning. Today, it was a farmhouse that looked like it came right out of 1940. I knocked on the door to no answer. Instead, the door listed open. I walked in and pulled out my gun. I kept it with me just in case. I announced loudly who I was, and then I heard a grunt from the back hallway. I wandered through the sparsely furnished house until I found a man lying in his own piss in the hall. He was drunk, despite the time of 10 a.m. I sat him up and asked if he was Richard Hiller. He said, yes, through burps and mumbles. I asked if he was a dealer, and he said, if you isn't a cop, then yes, sir, I am, in one long, rushed sentence. Then I asked him if he killed a girl in April of 1994 who had the initials SD. He laughed, pulled down his shirt, and showed me a necklace. The necklace, the gold SD shine off of the sun coming in through a crack in the ceiling. I remember that bitch. Tried to short me $10. I offered to let her split the difference, but she swatted my hand away from her ass. She tried to get out of my car, but my old knife stopped her pretty quick. But she tried to run again, and I stabbed her. That ass was heaven, even if she was bleeding all over the... That was all he got to say before I put 2 rounds of .38 special in his face. Then I put the last 3 from my revolver in the back of his head as he slumped down. I sobbed violently as I reloaded and unloaded an additional 4 until his head was little more than a red hole in the ground. I saved the last round. My shrink was right. The killer found his due. Sorry, this may not be the ending anyone was hoping for. Hell, it might not even keep you from sleeping, but I upheld one of my promises to myself after I jumped from my window. And as much as I'd like to say I'm strong enough to keep the first, I know I'm not.